Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, it was just, a year ago tomorrow that we scrapped the bad and crazy martinis and maybe even martinis altogether and were just guzzling champagne for the death of Osama bin Laden. Now we're at the one-year anniversary of that. And we're still obviously very glad that he's dead. But now there's a little bit of a political controversy here because of what's being known as spiking the football. The president said we didn't want to do that. That's why we couldn't release death photos last year. But now we've got this full one-year anniversary rollout of what a great job the president did in making the call to have the SEAL team take out Osama bin Laden. And you see this a lot. I think for the most part, I don't have a problem with him mentioning this. You certainly saw George Bush the first talking about the Gulf War in 1992. Obviously didn't work for him because there was not a great economy. Hint, hint. And of course, in 2004, President George W. Bush talked about his leadership in the war on terror as a major staple of that campaign. The difference is, though, is that this president seems to be demanding credit to the point where even the SEALs themselves are nauseated publicly about it. For some reason, he trotted out Bill Clinton, who had Osama bin Laden point blank about 10, 15 years ago and didn't pull the trigger. It looks like overkill, pardon the pun, when most people would probably just give him credit if he played it a little more subtly and gave more credit to the people who actually carried out the mission.
A couple of quick thoughts here. One, look, we still should be drinking champagne that Osama bin Laden is dead. And, you know, Mr. President, look, there's your applause. You are entitled to take. I think, first of all Americans were entitled to spike the football.
Right.
When the news broke, and I don't mind spiking the football. I don't quite grasp a world in which showing a photo of Osama bin Laden dead is going to cause al-Qaeda to cause terrible responses and to try to kill more Americans, because that's kind of how they wake up every morning, trying to kill Americans.
Right.
But somehow using it in an attack ad on Mitt Romney, that's not going to stir up the, you know, apparently it's only spiking the football when it's done in a nonpartisan context. If you use it in a partisan context, it doesn't rile up the al-Qaeda folks. And let me tell you, al-Qaeda folks, they're pretty riled up already. I don't really think we should be changing our behavior that much to avoid irking them or irritating them or bothering them. I have no problem bothering them. They're al-Qaeda, for Pete's sake. But even beyond that, what you mentioned back to 2004, and I was thinking about how Bush ran against Kerry, the convention in New York, which certainly dealt a great deal with 9/11 and the war on terror and the fight against al-Qaeda. And one of the things I think is worth noting is that the argument for Bush was about policies. The argument that we could not just arbitrarily withdraw from Iraq and let, you know, chips fall where they may there, that there was an aggressive stance, that this was, you know, what was needed to do, be it enhanced interrogation, be it the existence of Gitmo, all of these things. Barack Obama, if he could say, look, you know, I guess Obama wants to say, we have a policy of being willing to strike in countries without warning that are technically our allies and that have nuclear powers, and if we think a very dangerous man who's killed many Americans is there, we will do so, and we will not notify the host country. I think that's actually a very nonpartisan point in this in today's world. I think that everyone would say, look, particularly Pakistan, there may have been an argument of whether it was worth it to rile up Pakistan back during the Musharraf years. But year by year, it's become increasingly clear the Pakistani government is never going to be all that reliable. The ISI is never going to be on our side. We cannot trust them. And thus, if we see a high-value target on Pakistani soil, we got to go do that. We got to get them. We got to do the same in Yemen. And we probably have to do it just about anywhere on Earth. If we wanted to make this a policy discussion, I think the president would be in much safer ground, and there'd be much less ground for Republicans to complain, although I think there'd be less of a partisan division. I think actually President Obama would have more problems with his own party. As it is, we're just supposed to look at the bin Laden raid and say, boy, Barack Obama's just awesome. You know, he's president gutsy call. He just knows how to make the right calls, et cetera. And look, as I said, he's entitled to take a little bit of a celebration. But because it's divorced from any particular policy stance other than let's hit him where we find him, I mean, I guess the argument is from the Obama campaign now is that Mitt Romney would be too cautious and diplomatic in his dealings with terror, which is not traditionally the way Democrats attack Republicans on the issue of terrorism. We will see how these things play out. I am not so sure this is working well. And the fact that, look, there are reports of grumbling within the Navy SEAL community, both those who are still active duty and those who are retired are starting to say, look, we don't want to be political pawns. We don't want to be part of the reelection campaign. This could very well turn into like the Swift Boat Vets for Truth. This could end up being something that really blows up in the president's face. We'll have to see how this shakes out. The Obama campaign's partisan instincts, I believe, are starting to manage to ruin what should be a thoroughly enjoyable celebratory moment for him.
I think that's exactly right. And I think when he overdoes it now, it's going to lose its luster when he tries to roll that back out perhaps later in the campaign. And everybody's going to be saying, yeah, we know. You told us over and over and over again back in April and May. Let's move on to something else. So I think he's kind of diminished how powerful this could be for his own campaign by how excessively this has been promoted. So speaking of the president's greater legacy, let's move on to martini number two here in the bad martini. Bloomberg today reporting that one of the president's most common arguments back in the 2008 campaign is also blowing up in his face. Back then, he campaigned by saying that the middle class has been hurt under George W. Bush. Median wages are down, and that's technically true. They dropped about $2,000 after inflation during the first 7 years of the president's time in office. The only problem now for President Obama is that since he took office, it's down $4,300 and down $2,900 since the official start of his economic recovery in June of 2009. So much like the debt, the president even worse in 3+ years than the Bush administration was in 8 years, Jim. So probably not going to be spiking the football on that one.
Yeah, there's this fascinating fight you see in the political world, because the perception of Obama and his supporters is that we've done the jokes about recovery spring and recovery summer and recovery fall, and recovery is always 1 quarter away. But there are quite a few Obama supporters who would argue to you that the economy either has recovered or it is in recovery. And I think it's safe to say that if you know, median household income is down by about $2,000, this isn't really much of a recovery. And that, you know, how can you really call it a recovery when unemployment is still 8% and gas prices are so high, so many Americans struggling to get by. I went back and I took a look at a recent report on Americans' retirement figures, and they're just about as abysmal as you possibly could imagine. The good news for president is that the number of Americans who believe they'll have enough money to live comfortably in retirement has increased from 13% in his first 3 years as office to 14%, Greg. So forward, as the president likes to say. I believe the original draft of that, I understand, was a great leap forward, but I believe that's a disturbing historical context, so they got away with that. All of the figures on retirement savings are awful. For example, look, a lot of Americans have a tough time finding money at the end of the month to save for retirement. Only 66% say they're doing it right now. In 2009, allegedly the worst of the recession, it was 75%. So somehow between then and now, fewer Americans are saving for retirement. Greg, this is not a recovery. You know, I've been in good times. I've lived in good times. I guess the idea of Obama and his supporters is that if we all kind of forget what life was like before Lehman collapsed, then we'll feel like what we're seeing right now is you know, happy days are here again, because they've seen a slight improvement from the depths of 2009. Well, I don't think slight improvement really counts as a recovery. I think, you know, as I said on this podcast before, there is the recovery as in springing back, as in quarters of 7%, 8%, 9% growth we've seen in past recoveries from recessions. And then you have this, in which we're bouncing along the bottom or maybe very modestly increasing our economic growth. 2.2% was the most recent quarterly figure. Those are pretty miserable figures. And as much as this makes a tough situation for Obama to run in, as I've said before, this is a very high price for Americans to pay for an end to the Obama administration.
On to martini number three now. And we all know about Elizabeth Warren being the great Democratic hope to take out Scott Brown in Massachusetts. And right now, I think Martha Coakley somewhere is shaking her head going, you've got to be kidding me with this particular story. Elizabeth Warren apparently for nearly a decade filled out paperwork when she was in academia that she listed herself as a minority professor in the Association of American Law Schools desk book because she's Cherokee Indian. She's 132nd Cherokee Indian, thanks to her great-great-great-grandmother. It wasn't until actually, I believe, yesterday, Jim, that she actually had proof of this. So now the campaign is scrambling to put out press releases that she's got this distant cousin who works at an Indian Museum out in the Southwest. They got this genealogist to finally track down the proof. But still, you have this National Congress of American Indians outraged that Warren used that and potentially benefited her to get different jobs over the years, potentially at the expense of people with, just say, a slightly bit more, a higher percentage of Indian blood in them.
a lot of Americans, well beyond our little right-wing band, look at the entire system of affirmative action and systems of helping minorities and kind of roll their eyes at people who are not really ethnic minorities and claiming to be based on the most tenuous connections. I think this will hurt Elizabeth Warren in that she just looks like a giant phony. She just looks like somebody who, one, is caught doing this. And was, you know, it's very hard to believe that she was, you know, being promoted by Harvard Law School as a Native American professor and their lone Native American professor, who they were touting as an example of the law school's diversity. It's tough to believe she was totally oblivious to all of that and she didn't object to it. It's now been found out that in you know, biographical information she sent out to various professional organizations, she listed herself as being Native American. People who are indisputably Native Americans would look at this and kind of roll their eyes and say, this is ridiculous. You know, she's to claim a connection to a community based on 1/32nd of your genealogy of 5-generation connection looks pretty ridiculous, and I think this kind of makes her look silly. And kind of like she's someone who's willing to game the system, and for somebody who's supposed to be this great reformer of the system, I think it's particularly damaging. So this way, Elizabeth Warren, you know, if you're a crusader, it's not good if people are laughing at you, and I think that's. It's a very great comparison. I think Martha Coakley's saying, try going to Fenway.
Exactly. Remember back in 2000 when Hillary Clinton needed to get in better with the Jewish community in New York City and claimed that her grandmother was part Jewish and all the conservatives rolled their eyes? Well, this is exponentially more obscure on the part of Elizabeth Warren. So nicely done there. We'll see if it helps. Scott Brown, hopefully it does. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.